Blog Talk Radio.
Women Media, the radio show, and tonight we are featuring the Wise Women of Permaculture and Local Food here in Tampa, and we want to also thank our sponsors, Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, and Hoodood, who make it responsible every week for us to be on the air. The introductory song was Hang On Little Tomato by Pink Martini. I thought the song was pretty fitting, but I wanted to go right into the introductions of the three wise women that are with us tonight. One is Christy Abbott. The second one is Peggy Campbell. And the third one is Mary Davis. They all live in the local Tampa Bay area. They're all involved in different permaculture activities and initiatives, and I'm going to let them tell everybody what they're doing, where they're from, how involved they are with permaculture and the different initiatives, local initiatives that go along with that. And we will start with Christy Abbott. Christy, tell us where you're living and what you're doing, and you also have something to tell us about in the way of promoting permaculture classes in the area. So I'm just going to give you the floor and go ahead.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me to be on the show. My name is Christy Abbott, and I live in the Tyrone Mall area of St. Petersburg, Florida. And I am a permaculture designer here. I'm active in several different groups of people learning about permaculture and learning how to grow food in their yard, how to amend the sandy soil that we have here in Florida, and how to create food forests that last through time. And, you know, that's some of the things that I've been involved in right now. I'm currently in the middle of a transition initiating group meeting, and Transition Town Initiatives began out of the permaculture in the UK. Sorry, there's somebody. Sorry about that. I'm at a meeting and someone's at the door. So what I wanted to promote is that we are actually having an introduction to permaculture at the Moccasin Lake Nature Park in Clearwater, and that is going to be on Saturday and Sunday. The cost is $125, but the first 3 hours of Saturday morning are at no charge.
And this everyone is January welcome. And 15th, are those the dates?
January 14th, Saturday. It's Saturday morning from 9 to noon. It is open to the public. If you're curious about permaculture, if you're interested in what you think it might be, if you're interested at all, but you just don't know for sure what it covers, what it's about, I'm sure the three of us today will give you a sense of what that is. And, you know, it's a hands-on kind of being in the classroom, kind of taking a look at what it looks like to be in the course. And the course begins on February 18th on a Saturday also, Saturday and Sunday also at Moccasin Lake. So that's about course.
Can you tell us a little bit about the websites where people can go and get more information and possibly purchase? And purchase their spot, or, you know, pay for their spot, reserve their spot.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. Yeah, it's www.permacultureguild.us, PermacultureGuild.us. And you'll go to the courses tab. You'll choose Tampa Bay. And it'll have, there's three different courses on there now. There's the introduction for January 14th and 15th. There's a food forest section, which is just about the gardening. That is just how to plant a food forest here in our Tampa Bay area. And that's Saturday and Sunday, the 21st and 22nd. And then the course begins that Saturday morning is for the first 3 hours is actually open to the public as well at Moccasin Lake Nature Park. And the course begins February 18th. So that's pretty much everything about that.
Tell us a little bit about that. What you're doing in the permaculture end of it, and how this kind of goes right into the Transition Town movement, and tell us a little bit about that, because you and I met at the Transition Town class that was held.
We did. That was a Transition Town training that we met at, and that was a weekend event for people all around Tampa. People were there all over Florida, actually. So that was a pretty awesome event. what we're doing now is meeting. We're now in the mulling stage of a transition initiative. We have like 8 people in our meeting here tonight that we're talking about what does it take to create and include diversity in our invitation for our city to begin to look at our local resilience. What does it look like to have our needs met on a local basis? Like, how do we create our food locally? How do we encourage commerce locally? How do we maintain our education for our children locally? And how do we have that economy thrive and be sustainable? So those are some of the things that we're talking about here in transition. Did that answer your question? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, now the permaculture, how does that go into the transition town movement? How would you blend the two, and how do the two movements help each other? Like if you could compare the differences, perhaps.
I would say that permaculture is on a personal basis, like your own home, where you live.
Right.
You know, maybe converting your home to solar water catchment or composting toilets to lessen the water that we use, to lessen our impact of the water that we use in you know, just get rid of. And then how transition towns go into that would be more on, you know, my street, my neighbors, my city,
my little
neighborhood that I live in. And then more importantly, for us, we have several neighborhoods and several different kinds of communities here in St. Petersburg. And so how do we include them in our, you know, big party to say, hey, we want to talk about what it's going to take to lessen our impact on the planet.
Right, right. And for anybody listening, the book Transition Towns is what the transition movement was based on and how it began. And it really started in England and Ireland, and then, of course, it came over here to the United States, and more local communities are adopting the principles of the Transition Town and Transition Town movement. And it's becoming a way for all of us to kind of ease off of the use of and the dependence of fossil fuels.
The dependence of fossil fuel.
Yeah, if anybody else has anything to add on that, I mean, jump right in here. I know we have a caller that I have not yet had identified. If you want to hop in and make a comment or ask a question, the number begins with 953, so feel free to ask away. And can anybody else tell us more about permaculture or Transition Town since we're on this? Peggy or Mary or anybody that wants to.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's I've been wanting to actually read the book, the Transition Town book, myself, and a friend of mine, Tom Carroll, had it, and he was, I think, there where you all went to and got the book, and then he was here yesterday and gave it to me last night, so I just started reading it last night myself. It's actually online. I think you can read it that way also, but he actually had the book,
you
and I just started reading
him.
Yeah, so I'm just really excited
about
it.
The thing
about
the online version is that it doesn't have the pictures and a lot of the things that it refers to, so it's just text.
Okay. Yeah,
but it is
right.
The text of the handbook.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I got it on my Kindle, and I got the pictures on the Kindle, but I don't know if, any other way. So.
Yeah. Right. Well, everything that is that we are talking about, it's funny. It's like hard to separate anything because everything is so interrelated that we're talking about the gardening, the transition town thing. Everything is like changing. I think all the systems are in transition. Every system that we can think of, economic, political, healthcare, our food systems, everything is up in the air right now and all in such a transition, and change is what transition's about. I mean, we're talking about something that has to happen because things are just not working the way it somewhat worked, even though I don't know that things ever really worked the way we would have really liked it to, you know, all these different systems that we've become so dependent on. And something, it's very fragile, all the systems.
I think what we would find is that those colonies and villages and those cultures that lasted through time all evolved around an agricultural village, kind of village agricultural lifestyle. And I think when we can get ourselves back into that kind of village agricultural model, I think that's what's going to have us understand each other and know each other and participate with each other in a more harmonious way with the earth.
Right. It's healthy. It's healthy in every way you can think of, you know, to be connected with each other instead of just, you know, we have walls around us where we're not really connecting with each other in so many ways. And that's part of being healthy. It is healthy to eat your food that you grew yourself, connecting with the food. It's life, you know, and we're just disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I mean, there's a lot of ways that people say, oh, yeah, this food is, you eat the food with the vitamins and minerals, but there's even more. It's even more than that. So
it's
really exciting that everybody's coming together. And the Internet has been a fantastic, unbelievable, the Internet. If I could pick one thing that's causing all this to happen, it's the Internet, I would say. You know, it's exciting. It's really exciting.
Peggy, tell us a little what you're doing out there in Peggy at your property in incorporating your forest into forest.
Let me say a little bit about who I am and what's happening and what has happened in the process. We moved here. My husband and I moved here. Where we are, first of all, is in north of Lakeland, and we're in Polk County in the rural area, and we. A little bit farther inland, you know, inland from Tampa area, but from the coast. And we moved here from Fort Lauderdale 15 years ago with the idea of organic gardening and loving forests and the woods and nature and all that kind of stuff. And always had grown up in the urban areas, and I was just so excited to finally be able to do that. And then we did a little gardening and then got to working and so many obligations, responsibilities, a lot of good things we were involved in away from the place where we weren't even here giving attention or connecting with our own place. We have 4 acres and we were barely even touching it. We'd just come home and go inside the house and everything. So about 3 or 4 years ago, he had a wonderful job he loved at Publix and he left to say, this is what I wanted to do, the organic gardening. And we had not heard of permaculture at the time. And, you know, I always knew about organic and wanted to do that. So that was without chemicals and pretty much doing a lot of things that are in harmony with nature and trying to be that way and everything.
Yeah.
And then we heard about permaculture. After he started the gardens, and then we would take him to the farmer's market in downtown Lakeland to sell the extra produce, and we heard about permaculture, and I'm realizing, oh, man, this is so good. This is really going even farther, you know, than ever, even better than ever, even, you know. So it was like,
did you study
a lot
some
of
books?
Work
what,
involved.
What, how did you?
Well, there's a lot of work involved in just doing traditional gardening that people have done for many years. There's a lot of labor is what I want to say, there's a lot that does go with nature, but to even go further, nature is beautifully harmonious and works very smoothly, and it's like permaculture is even stepping more in tune with nature, is how I see it. As far as the gardening goes, and permaculture is not just gardening, but it's the most well known, if anything, of the aspect of permaculture, is because that's not all there is. But the gardening is a matter of even working with nature so much more closely that it's so much more smoother and less work, and that's a beautiful thing. So what's happened is we've been giving classes, also organic gardening classes, really basic introductory classes, but people can do it here in Florida. Sometimes there's things to know about Florida that's different. People come from somewhere else with experience, but then they don't understand Florida. So we've been doing that for about 3 years, and then we were talking about permaculture, because we were starting to practice, do some things here and there, and we'd mention it. And then we've been actually adding it into the title, and most of the people who come to our classes have never heard of it. So it's kind of nice, because it's Organic Permaculture 101 class is the way we title it. And the first thing I ask when we start out, what's organic, and we talk about that, but most people are pretty much got an idea what that is. But permaculture, like most of the people in the class, they raise their hand, no, they haven't heard of it. They have no idea what it is. But they came to our class because they knew organic, but they didn't know permaculture. If I just said permaculture, maybe they wouldn't have even come. So that's how that has worked out, and it's really good. So we're sharing with them, and we're in transition from just being on an organic farm to permaculture. So some of the things we started 3 years ago are going to be letting them, you know, go, and we're starting up the permaculture ways around our property, and we have school field trips that come, and 4-H clubs and Girl Scouts and all that kind of stuff. And so we're trying to have a demonstration so people can learn. And our next thing is to have put a sign out, because in our community and who live right around us on our road, and the little side roads off of us, there are hundreds of people who actually have some property who could be gardening, and I've been like looking to see, is anybody going to copy us? And so I'm planning on sticking a sign out, free garden classes on certain days for people who just drive by. I want them to stop in and do that, because we believe passionately in this, that it's great we're growing food for other people, but we really want them to take the next step and grow their own food. It's like really... it's really important, very important that people learn that. So,
now, Mary, I wanted you to introduce yourself and tell us about what you've done with your yard, because the last time I saw it, it was just incredible. It was like every nook and cranny had something that you could eat. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing thing, the way you took things like broken shards of pottery and used them for specific purposes in the garden, and everything was used and nothing was wasted. So fill us in on how you got started doing that, and what you're doing to maintain it, and how you're helping the community with that.
Well, I'm an old gardener. I've been gardening for a long time, and I keep changing my yard. It's always in a work in progress, but unfortunately, I don't have very much land. My lot is 100 by 125 feet, and the house is in the middle of it. I also don't have a whole lot of sun because I have huge trees, so I had to kind of work around it. And I started reading about permaculture, and I'm thinking, I really want to grow more food because I've had chemical poisoning, and I'm very leery of some things that are sold in the market. And although I do buy from local farmers that I know that grow organically, I decided I really needed to do some things. So I started out with what I called edible gardening. And because I have so many tree roots, I have to use raised beds. And I also use buckets, 5-gallon buckets, and grow things in it. So I started doing this, and I have a lot of what I call non-traditional veggies that I grow on my property that doesn't look like food. Anybody driving by that looked in my yard would not necessarily see food growing, although there is a great deal of it in there. I do have a food forest going, but it's, like I said, I have a lot of non-traditional things, like moringa. I have katuk, which is from Indonesia. I have Okinawan spinach. I grow native wood violets that is very good for your health. And they call the jewels of Opar, which is also very good. Eat pretty much vegetarian. My brother happens to be Buddhist, so he eats all vegetarian. So there's not a lot of meat cooked in our diet. And I read a lot of things, and one of the things that really struck me is something that a woman by the name of Grace Lee Boggs wrote, and she said, growing your own food is the most radical action you can take, and it's very vital in the coming century that people grow their own, or at least know who they buy their food from. And that's sort of where I'm at. I'm working with local, and I'm hoping this a group of young people over in Lakeland will start a Food Not Bombs. I know we have one in Tampa and one over in St. Pete. Of course, I live in Plant City, which is pretty conservative. And I just really, you know, I know Peggy through the Barefoot Gardeners organization, and I think, you know, if you ever get a chance to go out to her property, you need to go because it's really gorgeous out there. And they've done tremendous things out there. Mine is kind of cramped, as you say. There's not a lot of spare space in my yard. I have no grass. I've ripped it all out. I have walking paths. I have chickens. I have rabbits. I don't eat the rabbits. I only have them for their fertilizer. I have chickens for my eggs. And I'm trying to be as self-sufficient as I can be, but none of us can really be. And I think it's really important to have community. And I really, really think we have the basis of good community in the Tampa Bay area, considering Polk County, Pasco County, Hillsborough, and Pinellas County. I mean, the things that are going on here is just, it's phenomenal. And I'm just really proud that this is happening. At my age, I don't know how much longer I'll get to garden, but I just want people to, you know, really get into this. And I tell everybody, you don't really, if you can't get to a class, because we've got a wealth of wonderful gardeners and permaculturists in this area, but to go online and Google the different topics. I mean, there are videos that we can see that show us some things if they can't get to a class. There are groups everywhere.
A little bit about the book by Grace Lee Boggs, and I was very intrigued when you were telling me about it the other day, and I went and purchased it on my Kindle, and I've gotten past the actual introduction, which is by Danny Glover. So I haven't started reading the book yet. And, you know, I kind of wanted our guests to understand what this book was about and possibly get it, because I think it'd be a good book to pass on to others. So they're understanding.
Grace Lee Boggs is a 96-year-old activist that lives in the city of Detroit. She's Chinese-American. She was married to an African-American. She started out strictly as a political activist. But as Detroit became less and less of an industrial city and people didn't have jobs, she started looking at life a little differently. And her book is called The Next American Revolution, Sustainable Activism for the 21st Century. And it takes me a while. I haven't finished the book yet. I'm still reading it because it's so packed with good information. She has been behind the community garden movement in Detroit. She has so that, you know, we have to reinvent work so that people will actually have work they love to do and not just working to feed the current economic machine. She says we need to teach people to grow their own food. We need to look at life in a different way. The things that work in the 20th century aren't going to work in this new century. And as people have less and less jobs, they need to do more to sustain themselves. And she says not everybody has a piece of property, but they can always join a community garden. And it's a real big movement in Detroit. And she's been behind this really for a long time.
It also sounds a little bit like there's a town in England. It starts with a T. I can't remember what it is, but well, there's two towns in England that starts with a T. One is the part where the transition movement originated. And,
yeah, that's
right? I think it starts with,
Okay,
this is a different one, I think. And it's also in England, and it's one where these two ladies over coffee sat down and were talking a few years back and wanted to do something. And they started gardens all over town. Like, there's people now, and the whole town has been transformed. They're growing, I mean, even the city and the public places, everywhere there's food growing now. And the town has just changed dramatically. It's very inspiring to read about it. I mean, it could bring you to tears to read what's happened in this town. And it's like, if it can happen there, it can happen anywhere. Once you see something is actually really happening, that gets me very excited because I know it's really possible.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just growing food all over the place, and it's free. I mean, people can just, it's not like saying this is here and you can't and this is mine or anything like that. It's such a wonderful, and people are friendlier. There's just their whole outlook has been changing in this town where they're just it's a contagious atmosphere in the town, and it's very inspiring. There's videos and there's something on the line. I can't tell you the exact link and everything, but their goal is to become
YouTube.
What's
has
that?
It. I'm pretty sure. It's on YouTube.
Yeah,
and there's another site that it might be on. It's called nextworldtv.com.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that
has, great.
Yeah,
that's a lot of pressure on Next World.
Yeah, they want in 7 years, their goal, which is actually less than 7 years now, their goal is to provide their own food for their town where they do not need to import or bring in food from anywhere else but their town. You know, they have everything there that they need to eat. So that's really, there's so much good stuff, you know. And then there's an incredible edible park. It's called Incredible Edible Park. It's in Irvine, California. I just saw a video on that, and that's a park that was just, it actually wasn't a park. It was just an area of weeds in this town that was owned by the city. And I forget what the purpose of it was. It was just there as land that they couldn't do anything with, and they turned it into this park. And the city workers were just always having to clean it up all the time of weeds and cut it or whatever. And now they, instead, those same workers are actually growing broccoli and all this stuff there, and it's just there for, you know, providing
food
for people
now.
Isn't that awesome? It is. It really is.
Anybody can take it.
More like a gardening project, which, of course, that started in a lot of the urban areas where there were just empty spaces and they were taken over by people and planted. And, you know, urban in an urban area, that works. Then you're taking those spaces that are usually just used to throw trash in, and you can actually do something positive with it and even get kids from the schools involved.
Right.
And
everybody
in the community gets involved in it, and that's
what
it does.
Yeah, I was speaking to a teacher just yesterday who wants to get that going in her school and, you know, teach her fifth grade students a little bit about that.
Okay. Just in the past year in Lakeland.
I want to ask questions about some of the challenges about growing and actually farming and growing food in the Tampa Bay area. I know we have big issues with our soil and our water, and I'm just going to let you all speak on that and let our listeners know Florida's a great place because we have a great climate for growing. We've got lots of sun, And in certain times of the year, of course, it's great for water too. But we also have issues with our soil and sandy soil. We have different growing zones just within the Tampa Bay metro area proper. And I'm going to let you all speak on that and tell the listeners your different ideas and experiences with the soil. Who wants to speak first?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been on my property for 35 years. And I will say bluntly, I don't use fertilizer, but I do, not a leaf has left my property unless the wind blew it away. I've heavily mulched with oak leaves and pine needles. And I have a friend that raises horses, and I go out and get a load of his horse manure that's been composted. And he doesn't use any antibiotics or anything on the horse's feed. He's all natural stuff, so I know that I'm not getting any, you know, garbage in it. And I put it in my bed.
Yes, it's pretty important with horse manure that the animals aren't being wormed, because if you're going to be composting them and putting them in your, you know, in your soil.
Well, this thing is all natural stuff, and so
okay.
I don't have a problem with that. And then I also have my little rabbits who provide me with a great deal of fertilizer, and I make compost tea out of it. And I use that
great.
To fertilize with. And I have very rich soil. Actually, people can't believe how rich my soil is. And my brother lives where we grew up, and my mother did the same thing, and his soil is incredibly rich. But the house behind him won't even grow weeds. It's so poor. And but, you know, that property, and it's the same thing. We've composted for years. And have very rich soil. I never have a problem. If I need, quote, fertilizer, I make, rabbit poop tea, and that's what I use.
Yeah, I think the aspects that are working in your yard is that you have a thick canopy, which keeps your ground pretty shaded and covered, so evaporation is pretty much eliminated by that canopy. And then, with you adding the compost continually year after year after year, especially oak and pine, which is far more native here in the Tampa Bay area than, you know, say other areas, they are our greatest asset. I think that also is what's keeping your soil moist, you know, when you have a thick layer of compost like that.
I have no grass, and I've even got two of my neighbors trained that when they rake the leaves, to please bring them and put them on my leaf pile.
Right.
Good job.
I was
going to
say, when tree trimmers are going around trimming the oak trees, and
yes.
You can actually, maybe some of them maintain a list. You can call up and get on their list, and then when they're in your area, they can their chipped mulch can come and they'll unload it there, because otherwise they have to pay someplace to dump it, so they love to bring it to somebody and just unload it there. And that's really good for this, to help build up the soil, is the mulch like that. You know, chipped up.
And this time of year, people are raking up leaves and they're putting them in bags. And, you know, I ran short. I would go out and grab the bags, and I tell everybody, you know, this is the time. Go get the bags of leaves that are coming away.
Right.
And it worked.
Yep.
Now, can you all speak to soil that you're actually purchasing, or would you purchase organic soil? And if you do, how do you know it's organic, and how do you know what's in it?
I really only use my own composted soil. Yeah, I really like what Mary's saying, in that she has a thick, rich soil by adding her own animals' poop right on, you know, keeping that.
Right.
You know, one of the principles of permaculture is produce no waste. And what I hear in what she's saying is that she is closing those input loops by having her animals and her on, you know, her own biomass from her own trees nourish and nurture her soil. That's how it happens in a forest. How permaculture became about is that Bill Mollison would go out into the forests as part of his job, and he would observe those forests. And he noticed that there were no humans in there making everything grow. And ecosystems were very diverse but complete. And there was no waste, and that everything got utilized, and that there was a thick humidity layer on the bottom floor from the canopy that dropped down, and from limbs that dropped down, and from animals that died in there, and from the poop that fell from insects and animals and birds and lizards and, you know, all of that, and all the eggshells that dropped down. So all of that turned into this rich, moist soil. And he noticed that in that realm of the forest, that anything would grow if
right.
it had light and water and that kind of soil. So, you know, that is what the principles of permaculture, how they came about. And I actually have in front of me David Holmgren's Permaculture Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability. And I'd like to just read over the 12 principles of the permaculture. Well, they're called the permaculture design principles. And the first one is observe and interact. And like I said, Bill Mollison, that was his first job when he started looking at the forests, was that he observed, and he just he didn't interact too much, but he found that we did as humans interact, but if we were to interact, it could be on a positive way. And then the second one is catch and store energy. And that's why we catch and store our water. What I hear from Mary is that she's catching and storing her animals, you know, waste products and keeping that in the system, or catching the wood chips from, you know, the trucks that are already happening. I have water catchment at my place. Peggy, I think you do too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And number three is obtain a yield. Always have, you know, something that you're harvesting.
Right.
Number four is apply self-regulation and accept feedback.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, that's kind of like a check and balance. So you're doing something,
yes.
you find out that it doesn't work, so you step back from that a moment and try it a different way. So I like
yeah.
that kind of balances there.
Yeah, yeah. Number five is use and value renewable resources and services.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, always repair something rather than, you know, we live in this throwaway society. Oh, let's just get a new phone. This battery doesn't last long enough. You know,
I've been known to
get
what I
like
call curb crawling. You know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
I go around and pick up things that people throw away and reuse it.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then the other
and
word for that is the other word for that is repurpose. So you're reusing, recycling, and repurposing
exactly.
all the time.
You know. Yes. Exactly.
That's
a really
difference.
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really
difference.
Like that.
Great trellises. People throw away, you know, metal bed frames. And I
yeah.
bring them home,
yeah.
and they make great trellises for vines.
Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that just takes something out of a I saw someone using, they took out all the cotton from the mattress and used the springs and ran their beams mm-hmm. all on the mattress springs.
Wow, that's cool.
Not so that far. Yeah, but I do use old wine bottles and beer bottles to line out some of my beds.
Okay. And we use Venetian blind, the splats, the people throw away the blinds. I remember you did that, Peggy.
Yeah, that was so
cool. Yeah, we
cool.
write down the names of the plants and stick it in because sometimes,
sure.
especially when we have people coming here, I mean, some people come and harvest their own stuff and then, you know, school children or whatever to have to try and say, what's this, what's that? You know, it's a nice little way to label mm-hmm. your plants, or I forget what it is, or we forget what do we plant there, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. There's enough stuff in the world already. We don't
right,
need to.
Right.
We can be inventive. We don't have
yeah,
to create
yeah.
new stuff.
Right.
Well, no, and of course, I get compliments from people who come by and they see my, not just
yeah.
my garden beds, but my flower bed. As you said, I have
mm.
pretty plates that people, you know, they're cracked or whatever. And I use those as well as bottles. Brightly colored bottles to line out my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I get compliments
yeah.
on it. People just have never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, that's inventive and creative. I really like that. Well, let me go through these real quickly, and then we can have fun with every one.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number 6 is produce no waste. And that's a challenge for our society.
Yeah.
To actually produce no waste.
Right.
Number 7,
yeah.
design from patterns to details. I think that's what I heard, Peggy. No, not Peggy. Mary, with your bottles. That's the
mm-hmm.
design from patterns to details. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites is 8, integrate rather than segregate.
Mm.
Many hands
mm-hmm.
make light work.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And number 9 is use small
solutions.
Go ahead, Peggy. Did you have something?
No, go ahead and finish. I was thinking for some reason you were at the last one. Go ahead. That's good.
Yeah. Number 10 is use and value diversity.
Hmm.
Number 11 is use edges and value the marginal.
Hmm.
And the last one is 12, creatively use and respond to change.
Hmm.
And that's from David Holmgren's Permaculture Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability.
Hmm.
And he is a co-inventor of the word permaculture. So I really like his book.
Hmm.
It kind of puts it all in perspective for me.
Yeah, 2 documentaries that we've watched or we own and have watched and inspired us so much, and one is Jeff Lawton, and
I love him. The Food Forest.
Yeah, is he in Australia or New Zealand? I keep
yes.
forgetting which one it is. One of those places where, and it's tropical.
Yeah, they're all
so
Australian.
Yeah, so he demonstrates, and you can watch it and see. And there's YouTube videos, also shorter clips like that to watch. But he is so inspiring for us in our area because we have so much tropical to show and demonstrate,
yes.
you know, what you can do. And then because where we are, right, in this part of Florida, where in particular where our place is, we actually have things where we experience where it's not so tropical, like time of weather,
mm-hmm.
like last week when we were down in the low 20s for 2 nights for 12 hours straight. So we have a little experiences like that. Not as much in the coast as where we are inland here. And Sepp Hauser, and I forget what country he's in, but it's a European area. Yeah, so he is demonstrating for people who live in other areas, but he actually is amazing to watch what he's done.
Yes.
Because
yes.
he has so many different climates, he actually can grow tropical stuff there in Europe. It's amazing what you can do with permaculture. It is just like
mind-boggling.
That is
called creatively using, he was creatively using everything, you know. biodiversity.
Yeah, right. And just making all kinds of climates in one location.
Is the best book for somebody that's going into permaculture, like just first. I mean, this is their first exposure to it. They want to read more about it before they actually get started. What would you say is probably the best thing that they could read that's on the market right now?
Gaia's Garden.
My favorite was Gaia's Garden.
Yeah.
By Toby Hemingway.
Yeah. There's another little book that's called Permaculture in a Nutshell, which is a nice little, if someone wants to.
Yeah, that was a good one, too.
Yeah.
And I like food.
That one's really simple, and it's very easy to grasp.
Another one that's not strictly permaculture is Heather Flores' book, Food Not Lawns. Because it's about
that's a good one.
Growing the food, and that's a good one. It's real simple food.
Okay.
And
so
Chuck Holzer's book on permaculture is really a good one, too.
What was that one?
Zep Holzer, who Peggy was just talking about, he has a book on permaculture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like it was just published last year, wasn't it?
It was last year.
Yeah, when
permaculture principles and pathways that I was just with David Holmgren is really a good one too.
Okay.
Yeah, when you were
and then there's the Mac Daddy, which is very hard to comprehend, and that's Mollison's permaculture design manual.
That's a big one. Some of it is hard to understand.
It is hard.
Yeah, he's making references a lot of times to the weather patterns and things like that are in the southern hemisphere.
It's
so that makes it even a little more difficult for people. And what I would like to do probably tomorrow when I get internet access again is actually post those books for anybody that wants to do any reading up. And I did want to ask. Did all of you realize that within, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but I just got a video that was passed to me, Newport Richey Community Garden. It looks like they began one. It's actually started through the Code Green community. So they just posted a video, and so that's a really good thing. So this is happening throughout the metro area everywhere from, every little town. Every little area, there's an effort going on, and I got to give some kudos to the Tampa people too with the Seminole Heights Gardens too. Robin out there has really been working very very hard, and it shows. The effort shows. So this is happening, and it's a movement. And I wanted to ask you all, what are the next movements? I know Mary kind of filled me in on quite a lot that's going on out there in Polk area, county, and Lakeland. There's the Barefoot Gardeners, of course, Peggy, that you're involved with, and there's Food Not Bombs. There's a new alliance that's probably forming in Lakeland. Can you all kind of talk about what's been going on that's new that people might want to jump in and get organized and get involved in from the ground up?
Well, Mary, you want to talk about the alliance? Food Not Bombs?
Well, what happened is, I was doing some things with the Occupy movement, and I met a group of young people who wanted to do something other than hold up signs. And so they started talking about maybe creating an alliance of people who wanted to actually make a difference. And so they threw out a lot of different ideas, Food Not Bombs, community gardens, maybe a clothes closet, a food co-op, and so forth. So I said, well, first of all, you need to pick out one thing, get it going, get enough people involved, and then move to the next. And that's what they're doing. Right now they're concentrating on creating Food Not Bombs in Lakeland. Like I said, there's one in St. Pete, and there's one in Tampa.
And one in Orlando also.
Yeah. And there is a lot of resistance to the idea of feeding people. And I don't know why. I mean, it just boggles my mind. But anyway.
There's no profit in it.
Well, that's true. And the thing about what I like about Food Not Bombs is if they're not just feeding the homeless. They're feeding everyone who wants to eat. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you come through and you see people being fed, and if you're a millionaire and you want to eat, they'll still feed you. And the whole idea is everybody eats together instead of just feeding the homeless separately. And I think there's some young people involved in this, and I think they're going somewhere with that. And they talked about wanting to do a community garden. Okay, I can't really do that sort of thing, so I sort of said, okay, you need to talk to Scotty and Peg Campbell. So I sent them over your way. And I said, because the Barefoot Gardeners can give you tremendous backup and information and help in starting a community garden. But you got to find the land.
My thing is that, you know, the idea of feeding people like they're talking is great, but it's like the, you know, the adage, give a person a fish and they eat
mm-hmm.
for a day. Teach them how to fish and they eat for the rest of their life. So it's a wonderful thing to give the people the food and offer them the food. And there are people who their first thing they need right now, they're hungry. They can't even think about mm-hmm. anything else, but they're hungry. So if you first you do that, but then to take the next
and
step
then you
and,
move
and offer the yes, yes. It's like very important
the community,
not to stop
the community
right
gardens
there.
Or teach them how to turn their own homes, even if it's
right.
a small area.
Right, 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 exactly.
Into a garden. And if they don't, and I of course, I teach people the garden in buckets because you don't necessarily have to have a yard if you've got a patio or a balcony.
Right.
You can still grow
right.
something. So
right. here in the St. Petersburg area, we have meetup.com. The St. Petersburg Permaculture Guild, and we have over 400 members, and we are studying permaculture, and we do permablitzes for those who attend a certain number of times and have a piece of property that they need assistance with, and that's at meetup.com, the St. Petersburg Permaculture Guild, and we're about 400 members strong, and we teach each other, you know, we share with each other what's working, what isn't, what's growing, what, you know, works for us, and we're growing pretty strong in community and food growth, you know, we're growing a lot of food.
This is what it's all about.
And we share
and
a lot, yeah.
Real. I'm thrilled, you know.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm an old woman, and I really want to see these young ones take over and start doing this.
Yeah. We're getting a lot of new young members. Right.
Know,
their energy is beautiful. They we can be the wise
yeah.
women who are guiding the young with their energy, right? That feels good.
Well,
it feels really good.
Peggy, aren't we going to do another sustainable living this year?
There is going to be another one. Yes, there is, and
well,
that's in a few months already. Not that far off. And they're in Plant City. There's going to be another conference,
yes.
a sustainable living conference.
And
yeah.
you know,
I
was amazed at how many young people showed up for the last one. I mean, 20
mm-hmm.
somethings,
right.
and they came great distance.
Yep.
Some of them down from south, and some from South Georgia, and. I mean, they were just into everything, not only just growing it, but also preserving it, and they wanted to know things that, well, my mother and grandmother did, and even when I was younger, I did, like canning and doing all this stuff, and they're really getting into it, and I think it's wonderful. I think
yep.
it's wonderful. They're,
I know.
Tell us yep. about the time frame for the Sustainable Living Conference. And tell us a little bit about the last one. I know I missed it, but I'd like to know about this next one so I can go. Is it done at a particular time of year?
Yeah, it's going to be. I think it's going to be the fourth one already. Let's see, is it the, or maybe it's going to be. Yeah, it'll be the fourth one. The first one was, the first two were in the spring. I mean, in the fall, and then they kind of got into the spring, and it should be. I'm not sure if it's March or April. I can't remember right now, but it's somewhere around in that time period, and it'll be in at All World Acres in Plant City, where it was last year, the last couple years actually. And it'll be all weekend. There'll be speakers and guests and demonstrations and all kinds of good stuff. And it's very, very, very complete what they cover and everything. But it'll be announced in the Sustainable Living Show that's on every other week, and WMNF and everything. They will announce it. It'll be on the Barefoot Gardener site. Will announce it in all kinds of ways. It'll be. As much, I mean, we're really learning all the different ways you can announce things. There's so many places, and Facebooks and meetups, and you know, everywhere. So it'll be out there. Code Green, they'll put it, they'll do it, you know. So there's a lot
of presenters from the whole area, from Pasco, Pinellas. We had a huge contingent of presenters from Pasco, Pinellas County that came over. And I mean, it was really, really. I guess the last one, I think, was the best because we had so many people come. And it was just, like I said, it was just amazing.
I wanted to ask you all, how do you envision what will happen in our local area if the gas goes up to $5 a gallon? How do you see what would happen next, especially in the realm of, like, foodstuffs in the stores?
Or get more expensive.
It's already been happening, and it'll just keep on going that way. Where there's an interest, it's increasing. As some people are not working, it actually gives them more time to focus on growing their food, and just not traveling as much, and they're staying home more, and then it just gives them that one more reason to do it. You know, there's a lot of reasons, and that's just one more. To be able to grow it themselves, it saves money. You know, there's definitely that, you know. So
about availability of certain products, if the gas goes up any higher, do you think some things will actually be unavailable? Or?
I have a book called The Post-Petroleum Survival Guide and Cookbook by a guy named Albert Bates, who is with the farm up in, I think, Tennessee. And he talks a lot about how we can work around the fact that we don't have a lot of fuel, building solar cookers, solar dryers, how to stockpile certain kinds of foods so that, you know, the dried beans and so forth, and how to prepare them. And how to do without some of the, quote, conveniences that we have. I know I don't have much money, and as gas gets more and more expensive, I can't go to all the places I used to.
Right. One of the reasons why in the beginning I was very involved with the Occupy movement, but I haven't been able to get down there since October. My patient passed at the end of October, and that henceforth I wasn't able to make the trips down there. I wasn't able to pay the gas to get down there. So that was one of the reasons why I've kind of backed off from the movement, because I can't be as involved as I would like to be. So I'm sure that's happened with a lot of other people as well. I know there are a few people that are actually going down to the park and, you know, helping the people that are camping there, dropping off food, supplies, et cetera. But those are the people that have the financial means to be able to do that. So, yeah, my time is very limited. When I venture out and spend any money for gas, it's very carefully thought out and prioritized before I leave the house. That's the way I have to be. And this is happening with so many people that are unemployed, you know.
Well, I noticed that our extension office and our local recreation department here in Plant City have actually been having classes on how to can and how to preserve your food.
Right.
And they're getting a lot of interest in it. And it surprised me when I found out that the actual recreation department here is behind some of it. I know that they do have some things at the different extension offices, and it's a good resource for everybody. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I got all my water barrels from them, but people are beginning to get interested in preserving food. After they grow it, they want to preserve it
mm-hmm.
for the times when they can't grow.
That's one thing that we didn't talk about is how the choices that we have in Florida can be different from a lot of other places in the United States. Of the plant
mm-hmm.
choices, the food choices, are not always the everyday things that you might see in the store that people are used to seeing. There's all these alternative, like you mentioned, Mary, in your yard, having all these other kinds of foods, and some of these are very Florida friendly. I just had someone recently tell me that she couldn't do anything in the summer. You can't grow anything here in Florida in the summer, and she had an organic gardener had told her that, and she was so thrilled to hear me say that there are so many plants that you can eat
mm-hmm.
right through the summer if you just know the right ones. And she says, "Oh, please tell me what they are," because she thought that she just had to quit all summer long, you know, and that's very commonly thought here because everybody's thinking mostly about, you know, what they were used to for years and years of lettuce,
mm-hmm.
Regular lettuces and different things like that. But yet there are so many plants that all summer long we have the best greens that you could ever want during the summer. They're actually much more healthier, actually intensely filled with
mm-hmm.
nutrients, and they just thrive through the heat and the humidity. So these are plants that were more naturally grown here that love Florida, Florida-friendly plants, that's what we call them. So, you know, I just think that's a wonderful thing to learn about so that you can actually not try and force a plant that was meant to grow in New York and try and grow it here in Florida, which is what causes people to be discouraged and not even want to try,
right.
you know, so...
What about container gardening when you have to manipulate the weather and you have to keep some of these plants indoors if you think it's too hot outside? Would container gardening work where you've got something delicate that's outside, you can bring it in and put it by a sunny window? Or is that kind of not a workable solution?
That. But... actually, container gardening takes more water than a regular garden in many ways because it dries out faster.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to suggest there's a number of people who now do what they call eating the weeds. Okay,
mm-hmm.
These are things that normally you don't really consider food, but they are very good for you nutritionally, and we're blessed with John Starnes over in South Tampa, Willow Lamont in Delrico, a guy named Andy Firk who is down in Arcadia, and they do what they call wild food walks. And I've learned in the last year there are things that, quote, we consider weeds that are very good nutritionally for us. And there's a purpose for, and they're only weeds because we consider them weeds, but they're edible. But
right.
you do have to know how to pick them out, which is why you go to these people who know how to do it. And they're actually good for certain medical problems, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using
right.
them for my brother who just went through cancer treatment. And we made a tea. We called it herbal, but it wasn't all herbs. It was... some weeds, literally,
mm-hmm.
and they helped him.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that we call all our veggies that we're used to growing in other places that don't do well here, we have been blessed by nature with other alternatives, and it would, you know, make sense for us to learn how to use them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Hmm.
For example, Spanish needles. Did you know that that was good for blood pressure? And you can make a tea out of the seeds from the Spanish needle, the actual needle, and which is good for men who have prostate problems.
There's
a common landscape plant that maybe you know. It's Podocarpus, and it's another name I'm thinking is Japanese yew, Y-E-W,
mm-hmm.
but it's like a bush, and usually it's very common for someone to have two bushes, one on each side of their garage door, and a perfectly sheared rectangle. You know, it's, I don't know,
yeah.
they got needle type green needle. They look like an evergreen. They're an evergreen looking bush, and they get red berries on them, reddish purplish looking berries, maybe twice a year. And those, for years and years, I had seen those, and I never even dreamed they were edible until a few months ago I found out. I mean, I'm just amazed at how many things are edible, and they actually taste delicious. So if we, the more we learn these things and can add to it, we already have so many things around us just in the cities that are just regular landscape plants, we thought, and never even dreamed that we had all this food already growing. And then we can add to it. In Lakeland last year, the head of the person who heads the maintenance of the landscaping and everything in the city places, he, and then they even have large pots, ceramic pots, clay pots in the downtown areas around the businesses, and they put plants in those pots and everything. Well, he started planting edible things last year in Lakeland, and that are ornamental edibles, and they were like free, even at the library or whatever, all these beds, he started putting them in. And they were just for anybody who could pick them and eat them. It was okay. It wasn't like they're saying, well, we planted this stuff, but don't touch it. It was actually, and they had an article in the Lakeland Ledger about it, you know, recently. So I thought that was like, oh, good, this is awesome. So there's somebody with the Food Not Bombs and the community gardens. I mean, here's somebody already with the city who's very friendly toward this kind of thing already, you know, started to know. To contact,
have you all
sure.
heard about the different the initiative called windowfarms.org? And what do you think about that as a space-saving thing that somebody, you know, living in an urban area could use that might not have space outside to grow or put containers?
I've seen the video myself about, it's been about a year or so or more since I saw what you're talking about. And
right.
I guess it can work. There's certain things about it that's good. I know that it seems like it would be, it's not as natural as getting it outside in the dirt. I'm thinking it wasn't in dirt, if I remember right. It was like a hydroponic type system.
Right, it's hydroponic. And what was cool about it was using the plastic bottles and actually cutting off the tops. And then there's something that's
right.
to a fish pump, you know, water pump.
Right,
that would be
right.
attached to the whole contraption, and then you can hang these things in your windows and actually
mm-hmm.
grow edible greens, spinach,
right.
kale,
yeah.
other things that, you know, would be completely natural. You could make a salad out of it, and it, at the same time, it's providing a curtain for your window, which I thought was really
right,
cool.
Right, right. I think a lot of things like that are steps, and they're better than buying something that was grown halfway around the world and not organic and all that. There are good things about things like that. I think that it's still not quite as natural as, of course, growing in the dirt. You know, there are things about soil. There's bacteria in soil that is very beneficial to our health and to the plant, and that affects us one way or the other. So something that was, to me, that is preferable for me to eat it if it was grown in good soil over something even that was hydroponic. But hydroponic is better than a lot of things that were grown with chemicals and things like that. So it's definitely, everyone can do the best they can do with wherever they are, that's a great thing, you know, it's a good thing.
Well, that brings me on to another topic that we haven't discussed that I think is really important for anybody that wants to pursue permaculture or any type of growing, and definitely growing to eat, and that's our issues with water in the local area. Can any of you speak to the water issues that are definitely plaguing us here in this area, from sinkholes to fluoride in the water? Give us a little, maybe a little more insight than what we've got already about our water problems here.
One thing I would like to say is that where we are, I've watched, like Christy was talking about observing, I have observed in 15 years we've been here, anything that is planted in the ground just growing on its own that we didn't plant it, or maybe we even did plant it, but it's already established and it's just growing there. In 15 years, there have been maybe twice that there was an extreme extended time where the temperatures were high and the rain wasn't coming. It could have been like a couple of weeks, 2 weeks in the 90s and no rain, or even longer than 2 weeks, that they just barely started to wilt, and that was it. You know, and so when things are growing in nature, it's amazing how long they can go without water. It's when we try and do things not so natural that we have to, like, worry more about the water. But when we mimic nature, the water is very insignificant. Watering is amazing how little you have to water. With permaculture, the watering is everything's considered and done in more in line with nature. So that's one thing I could say about it. I'm sure Christy could say a lot more about that, and Mary too.
Now, is Christy still on the line? Because I'm looking at a number here, and I wasn't sure if it was hers or not. Somebody else is actually on the line. But haven't said anything or identified themselves. Mary, what can you say to us about water?
Well, I mulch heavily, and that retains the moisture. And if I need to water, I have rain barrels because I can't afford to water everything. There are times when, like Peggy says, they start to wilt. That's when I use the rain barrels. And,
right.
You know, I've got 7 set up, and they never go dry.
Well, we have rain barrels that we were actually able. I got one through an extension service or extension office class that I took on water barrels, and then there were a few others that I purchased from a guy on 301 that's selling them, actually food grade water barrels for $15 each. Which I thought was a real deal. And I was really surprised.
Did they have the spigot in them already, or they didn't have the spigot in it or anything, right?
I think, you know, my Leon was the one who put them out, so I'm not sure if they have the spigot on them or not. I'd have to check.
Oh,
but
okay. Yeah.
I don't think so. But they were
up a little bit.
Yeah, they were in good shape, and we brought them home, and they're always filled. But I know my neighbor has the most gorgeous ornamentals around his house. He has not yet got the thing to do a permaculture project in his yard. So he's got a lot of beautiful flowers and plants and perfect grass. And they had just moved in, and he had watered his lawn pretty much every day. And he was going completely against the rules because we only have 2 days a week when we can water. And he watered, and I think they ended up with a $500 water bill. And his wife hit the roof. He had to go down there and actually prove that they had put in new grass and bring all the receipts, and then they took a portion of that bill off. You know, they probably discounted it like 50% or something. So because he was able to prove that he had put new grass down. But with
our
situation,
our goal here is not to have any grass eventually. What little grass is here was here when we came here, but we have a section of St. Augustine that was just here already when we came. We have different kinds of grasses. We have like 4 acres, and there's different woods and this and that and everything. But on that St. Augustine grass, that whole section, we have never in 15 years ever fertilized it. We have never watered it, and it stays green and growing. It doesn't grow as fast as if someone is watering and fertilizing, all that kind of stuff. So we don't have to cut it as often as I know, you know, like in a city, you'd have to cut it, you know, it's going to grow so much faster. So there it is, just sitting there, never had a disease, never had anything, and we never
did anything but just cut it, you know, every couple weeks, 3 weeks even, you know, like that. So that just shows you that people are getting their grass like that dependent, where they, it wouldn't, it, you know, they've actually made it artificially dependent on that water and the mm-hmm. fertilizer and everything. It doesn't really need it like that. So, but eventually we don't even want to have it anyway. So it's just interesting all this, how we've gotten.
I would like to be able to actually not have grass, but unfortunately we live in a deed restricted community. So I'm not even in a situation where I can do permaculture. The most that I could probably do is container gardening. So I've made a vow that
the backyard.
Next... Yeah, well, we're not even allowed to do that.
Well, there's a video, a YouTube video of a family in Pasadena, California, who live in a, you know, it's a community where, you know, Pasadena, California is a place where you, you know, have a lot of restrictions and whatever and everything like that. And they turned their whole place in the city, and they have a small yard and everything. They grow food and the whole thing, but it's beautiful. And they did it in a way that people would think wouldn't, you know, couldn't say anything. And now the community actually thinks it's beautiful and loves it. So it's a matter of not, there are ways to do it. It's just, it would take a little extra thought and effort to do it when you have to consider your neighbors. But it,
right.
edible landscaping is the thing with the, in a community like that. It can be done where people wouldn't even realize what you're doing, you know what I mean? And it still has the...
Well, my situation is that we rent the house, so it's kind of...
Oh, yeah, right.
We're not in a position to spend the money since we're not, you know, we're not going to be staying there
right.
10 or 10 years. But, you know, I made a vow that the next place I live in, I'm definitely going to have a say-so about what's planted in the backyard, the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
And in
right.
the front, of course, we're restricted to just beautiful ornamentals, which mm-hmm. I spent just probably last spring, I probably spent hundreds of dollars just to get ornamentals up in the front. And
some
I
of those may be edible and you don't even realize it.
Yeah,
there may
I would,
be something edible.
I told my partner, I said, you know, I told Leon, I said, I'm not going to spend this kind of money again unless we can eat it. So
mm-hmm.
there's just no way. So
there's a lot of plants that are edible that are really beautiful. And,
right.
You know, you can... I have plants people don't know that they're even edible in my
right,
yard.
Right.
But some of them are in containers, but, you know, I have violets. I have, we're talking about native wood violets. I have something called Jewels of Opar, which is
mm-hmm.
has a pretty lavender flower on it, and it's mm-hmm. edible. My Okinawan spinach is edible, and everybody thinks they're shrubs. They don't
we have on our Fairfoot Gardeners site, we have a whole a link to a site of edible flowers. I mean, there are more flowers that are edible than not. You know that? It's amazing when you start looking into it, how many things are actually edible. It's just something. I'm trying to think myself off the top of my head all the things that are...
Like nasturtiums are edible. Regular hibiscus.
Yeah, geraniums and patients. Yeah. Oh.
I had an 18-year-old iguana. She passed several years ago, but she used to eat the hibiscus flowers. She absolutely loved
mm-hmm.
them. So.
Oh, yeah. Roses.
Put the hibiscus flowers in front of her, and she would just gobble them up. So she was
mm-hmm.
definitely a food product for her, and definitely... but I did want to touch, too, on how much we all learn about just natural healing. It comes kind of naturally when you're studying permaculture or gardening or actually getting your hands in the dirt on how much of this is actually beneficial health-wise. And, of course, as we know, this was for centuries the medicine. This was our medicine.
Right.
You know,
right.
So... In all of that, we learn what's good for us, what can be used for certain ailments. And if either of you wanted to talk on that, go right ahead. I mean, I keep an aloe on my kitchen windowsill all the time. I'm constantly cutting myself or burning myself. I think that's typical with an Aries person. It just always happens. So I have an aloe there, so I put fresh aloe gel on my fingers whenever I cut myself or burn myself, and that's it's also become kind of a good luck item on my windowsill just to have it there.
Well,
it's really home.
I just found out. Recently I just found out we planted a few olive trees, which I had heard that you couldn't grow olive trees in Florida for some reason. A lot of people had heard that too, and now apparently you can. And they do, and that was a myth, apparently. So it's so exciting to me to have olive trees. Our goal eventually is to...
Hello? Hello, did we lose her? Mary, are you there? Hello? It looks like we've lost our callers, so please call back in, and I'll authorize you so you can speak. We were talking about, I think Peggy was telling us a little bit about the olive trees and how they are, we're able to grow them in Florida, and blueberries is another item that we were not supposed to be able to grow in Florida, but they are able to be grown here. And I know that there's blueberry farms just north of Tampa, and Brooksville will be planting its first Blueberry Festival. I'm not sure the month, but it'll be sometime this year. For some reason, I'm thinking fall, but we shall see. I'm hoping that Peggy and... Oh, here we go.
I just lost my signal.
Who have I got on the line now?
This is Mary.
Okay, Mary, we're just waiting on Peggy to call back in. Maybe you can fill us in what she was trying to tell us about the olive trees.
Okay, you can make a tea out of the leaves, which is good for your immune system. Is she coming back in?
Somebody dropped off, but it was somebody. It was the person that didn't identify themselves. Nope. Seems like we're having some technical difficulties. Mary and Peggy, call back in if you can. As Mary was saying, that you can make a tea out of the olive tree leaves. And you can make a tincture by adding a small amount of vodka. She'll tell you exactly how to do it. If not, I'll put the recipe up on the website. But in any case, the olive leaf extract has really amazing antibiotic properties. It can cure just about anything. It's an antiviral, antibacterial, and it's always good to have some olive leaf extract in your home. So, let's see. Mary, is that you?
Yes, I keep losing my signal. I don't have a very good signal here.
Okay, well, I'm losing Peggy, too. Now, you were telling us about the olive tree leaves and the extract.
Well, I read something about just taking the leaves and making a tea.
Uh-huh. And I had heard about extract, where you actually use a little bit of... vodka and make a tincture, and that it's an antiviral.
I don't know how to make extracts or anything like that. I have discovered that, like I said, certain things in my yard. My violets, for example, now we're talking about native violets, is good for keeping you from getting tumors. Yeah. And so we eat them in our salad, and lemongrass is really good. Make a lemongrass tea.
Right.
I have what they call, it's called Jewels of Opar. I never had had it before, and I got some from Monica Brandeis that has written several books. And she says that it's good for your immune system.
Okay,
so
we got feedback on the line, too. So, Peggy, I think we kind of filled in the audience on the olive leaf. Now, Mary told us a little bit about olive leaves and olive trees. Can you tell us a little more?
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to. I was just growing them for the olive
the olives themselves, and then I found out suddenly about this olive leaf tea and how good it was, and I was like, that was so exciting. It's good for the immune system. It sounds like something, you know, I mean, we just haven't gotten to it yet. I just found out about it, so that was exciting. I just can't, there's just always things I'm finding out. There's just so much to know, and it's just exciting, and the internet, of course, helps a lot to find out all these things, you know, so... yeah, I lost you for some reason, and I couldn't get back in, and I just finally got back in. But anyway.
Well, good. I'm glad y'all are back. I don't know, Peggy, if you know Willow, but I know Mary does.
Yes.
And
yes,
Willow is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. She has all this information in her head. It's just amazing what she knows about the properties of plants and herbs and how they heal us. She does, I know she does workshops regularly at Sweetwater Organic Community Farm in Tampa. So if anybody wants to find her, she's not on the internet, so you have to go there and actually meet her. She usually has
the other way is the Barefoot Gardener Yahoo group. Whenever she's having something, somebody usually forwards it to me, the information, and I usually send it out on the group, the Barefoot Gardener Yahoo group. And also on our website, we have upcoming events and classes, and maybe not the latest class, but at least the contact information to call her and find out what's happening with her, because she doesn't do the internet anymore. She's not doing it. She's a little bit ahead of us, I guess. Maybe one day none of us will be doing it. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's kind of funny.
I'm printing out everything in hard copy.
Mm-hmm.
I print it out.
I think that's a wise thing, and I know a lot of people that are actually putting stuff on CD as well, or DVD, and I'm keep saying to them, if you're putting it on DVD and we don't have computers that work, then how are you going to read that? You know,
right.
So I still think the best option is to print it out in hard copy, and if you've got to bind it in some type of notebook, at least at that point it becomes a valuable book, but I know I have my Kindle and I absolutely love it, but there's certain books that I do not want on my Kindle.
Oh yeah, I'm not getting rid of my books yet. That's for sure. I'm not.
Oh no,
I'll never
no,
get rid of my
absolutely
book.
Not. Because if we lose the ability to have the computer and use that for contacting each other and networking, then the Kindle is going to be lost too. So we definitely want certain books in hardcover. And we want to be able to make reference to them and use them for teaching, because the younger people are going to need to be taught.
So
I have about 4,000 books, so I'm not getting rid of anything.
No, it's just too valuable. The books are just too valuable. I could care less about fiction, but there's things like, you know, all my gardening books, cookbooks, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Has to do with amazing history, like, you know, Howard Zinn stuff. These are things I want to keep. George Orwell, things like that. The books they're banning are definitely the books I want to keep. I don't want to throw those out. You know?
Well, what I'm trying to do is find young people who will take them and use them. And I've been giving them to certain people that I know that are interested in certain topics or... you know, whatever, and I'm trying to give it to somebody that I know can use it, because after a certain period, I'm not going to use it anymore.
Right.
And, you know, so I'm trying to pass it on to those that I know will use it.
Right.
Of course, I will be selling a sustainable thing, which I did last time, like really cheap. And they were snacking them up. Books on
I got some of your books too, Mary.
I know.
I got books from you.
Well, I have some really good ones, you know. And I have, you know, a lot of books from the 60s and 70s and the Back to the Land type movement.
Mm-hmm.
So I have those.
Right.
But I'm trying to find people to take them and use them.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you all
types of serving books.
Have you all used the Foxfire books at all? How-to books from back in the 70s and 80s?
I have some of those, and that's interesting. I didn't even think about getting those out and looking at them. Boy, That's a good idea. I'm glad you reminded me. We had went there years ago and actually visited there, and then and got some of the books while we were there, and then I haven't thought of that. Boy,
because there was a whole series. I'm not even sure how many there were altogether, but someone just sent me volume one on a PDF. So it was my friend Josh, and I saved it to my hard drive so I can actually read it when I'm not connected. But that's just one example of some of the old sources, the old books. And here we are. They were written in the 70s and 80s, and we're calling them old. but the info in them goes back many, many years, and it's just basic information of sustainability, gardening, and how-to. And they're amazing references. So, I'd love to have the whole collection. I just wish I knew how many there were.
I think there's 12. And I had 8 of them, and I've already passed those on to somebody that I knew would use them.
Good. Oh, good. That's good. Now, I wanted to ask you, I know that there's lots of training things, the Sustainable Living Conference, Transition Town, and, of course, the permaculture permaculture classes that Christy was telling us about. But what about teach-ins and things like that? What I'm thinking about is teach-ins for people that might not necessarily have the money to actually attend a permaculture training, but teach-ins where they can learn a little bit at a time. I know you're developing this alliance. Would this be a part of that alliance that's forming out in the Lakeland area?
We've been discussing it, but I would suggest if they've got internet access, just Google the subject. And there are lots and lots of videos. And go to, there's a website called Films for Action that has permaculture. And they had all kinds of topics, but, I mean, they're really good ones. And then the Next World TV, and then one called Peak Moment Conversations. And they're like 30-minute ones that are really good. They have things like how much food can I grow in my yard? Just all kinds of topics. And that's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, too, it's like there's books and there's people can learn from books. They can learn from YouTube videos and websites. And there's so many ways people can learn like that. And then there's something about being in person, you know, on site and being able to see and taste and smell in person. And we've been, like, actually offering our classes on a donation basis, basically. We have a $15 or whatever you think the value is, or just bring a sincere desire to learn for our classes is what we've been doing, because I just don't want some – it's so important to me that people learn what we're offering that I don't want somebody not to do it because they don't have the money. And so that's what we've been doing. And I think I mentioned earlier that even in our own neighborhood, I'm just going to put out there free classes, because right here, you know, right surrounding us, I really want people to come. I want it to explode right in my own neighborhood, you know, where we live. And that's,
and
what, wherever we
offer. Land out there. And there's so much
land
out there.
Yeah, they do, but there's not necessarily that many people are growing that much yet at this point, you know. So I want to inspire them more and motivate them and get them to do it, you know, and whatever it takes. And it's like, just come here if it's free, because I just really want to look around and see a lot more growing. And so if it says free, maybe it'll be a little more inspired to come, you know. But even in the ones that were the community gardens, that's something that we would be involved with, you know, teaching and getting it started. But then we would teach people and let them continue and then pass it on, pay it forward. That's what I envision, you know. Not that it's all on certain people to have to keep doing that, but you just keep sharing it and sharing the knowledge and the wisdom, and like that. So, I can't
think
of anything.
Why do you think I said the kids to you?
I think paying it forward is, I think paying it forward is the most blessed thing that you can do when you have the knowledge, and we as wise women should always be willing to pay it forward. I don't think there's anything wrong with a little bit of remuneration, like, you know, on a sliding scale where people, like you said, Peggy, you know, they can afford to pay 15 now and maybe next month 25. You know, you pay a little bit because they're not paying for the class per se. They're paying for the time that you're spending with them to teach them a basic principle on something. So I don't think there's anything wrong.
Or we say, if you can come and help us here, we can use some help. You know, whatever it works out. You know, whatever. You know, or do something. You know, that, you know, because this is something that's coming up. Also, is the economy. Our whole system has been so narrow of what we think is valuable to offer, and then we have money involved to try and figure out what exactly is this worth. You know, what is everything worth? And we've got a complicated system going on, trying to figure out how to exchange and give and give and I give you this, and now you give me something back. There's something that's been going on that's going to be changing. That's all there is to it. The Roosevelt, we have a Roosevelt, it's in Ybor City. They're a place that have been hosting all kinds of events, and they have something coming up in a couple of weeks that I'm really excited to go see. Charles Eisenstein will be there speaking about a new way of thinking about money and how the economic, it's called Sacred Economics. And his what he's going to be speaking about, and it's actually a donation thing for him. I think it's about 2 or 3 hours, and he's an author and a very fascinating to hear him speak. I'm really excited. It's on a Sunday evening coming up, and because so many things are changing in all of our different systems and our ways of doing things, and that's one of them, is economics that are changing, and I'm really excited because it's about gifting. Gifting is the word. It's not about, like, trying to keep track. Bartering could be a way of not using money. But then to go even farther, it's gifting, because we have so many gifts that are not being utilized that everybody has something to give. And to look at it like that, if everybody was giving and had that feeling that they don't really need to be constantly worrying about taking, they can give and give, and everybody's giving, and that's a... that's what's coming. That's what's coming, and it's really good that we need to have these changes that are coming, because they're long overdue, as far as I'm concerned. So
have also in the Tampa Bay area. I'm not sure too many people know about it yet. Is the time banking? I've actually been to the website. I haven't logged on yet, but I've looked around and I've also checked out the time banking initiatives in other towns and other metro areas. And this seems to be the newest in thing, where you give an hour of whatever your specialty is and you get an hour back, and it doesn't matter if you're the dog walker and you're exchanging an hour of time with an attorney. The dog walker's hour is just as valuable as the attorney's hour. So it's really definitely, like you said, a new way of thinking about economics, paying it forward, how you're actually going to go and purchase a service, because it's not going to be purchasing in the old paradigm. It's going to be purchasing in the new paradigm. Well, I'll spend an hour walking your dog if you give me an hour's worth of legal counsel, for example. So this is new. It's what they did, and it's new for us. It's old because that's how business conducted in the old way, old days. And with the devaluation of the money and the economic downturn, and I don't see it getting any better. I don't know about y'all, but I don't have too much hope of that. This will be a way where we can still conduct business with one another. And I think it's wonderful, and I'd like to learn more about it. So I'm going
to do a little more research. Another documentary that I got last spring, it came out, and it's only an hour, and I didn't even watch it until about a month or so ago, and now it's actually on YouTube that anybody can watch it, but it's called The Economics of Happiness. And Oh, I just could not believe what I was watching. What is that?
It's got a, they've got a great website.
Oh, yes, yes. But the documentary is about a community, a culture that was isolated for thousands of years and how they operated. And then what happened when the rest of the world caught up with them and how it started to deteriorate and how they are catching it and getting it back, realizing what was happening, and also teaching the rest of the world, you know, look at this is what's possible for us also, and what happened to us? Where did we deviate from those kind of ideas, and what happened? You know, it's really a good, hard-hitting visual, very well done, Vuk, and only an hour, and it covers so much, and talks about being local. In there, this community was local. They had no crime. They were very happy. They barely worked. They had no unemployment. They had everything they needed. And then something happened that changed it all. And how it's getting back to that. It's just really good. I just loved it. It was very inspiring to me. I love seeing people who actually did it or were doing it. It's actually happening in the world. That makes me feel really good that we can do it too.
There was a book also that was written from a pagan perspective, and it was by the author Starhawk. She's also a globalist activist slash writer slash workshop, permaculture workshop facilitator. So she kind of does it all. But the book was called The Fifth Sacred Thing, and it was written kind of like a science fiction, but I really believe it was a collection of her envisioning the future of what it would be like 25 years, 35 years into the future. And
was it
she
the fifth sacred thing you said?
The fifth sacred thing. And it has won some book awards. And actually, it's being made into a movie. And that's just a recent project that's begun. And Mary knows about it because, you know, she's read it as well. I think you've read it, haven't you, Mary?
Yes,
and in any case, the book talks about San Francisco being one permaculture, completely sustainable city, and how the people that lived in it only had to work maybe 3 or 4 hours a day. They lived in relative harmony with the earth, harmony with each other. Nobody was stressed. It was really an amazing utopian society written about in the book, and I encourage everyone to read it because there are a lot of parallels. When the book discusses the political situation of today, there were a lot of parallels about what's happening right now, which is amazing to me that Starhawk could see that far into the future and actually almost completely get it right. So some of the terms might be different, but you can see this too many similarities. It's almost eerie. And I think the book was written in 1991.
Yeah. She said that when they're making this movie, that she actually is going to use permaculture principles in making the movie itself. And when they build the set, she wants them to build it and give it to the community where they're filming it. Any landscaping or any gardening they do for the movie will be turned over after it's finished to the community where it's being filmed.
Mm.
She wants to use permaculture principles in making this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's
I encourage everyone, while you still can, before the movie comes out, to at least check out the book, read the book, get on the Wise Women, wisewomenmedia.posteris.com, or check us out on Facebook and, you know, put a comment or two about what you thought about the book. It's not an easy read. It'll take you a little time because it is a big, thick book. And it's easy to find. I got it on my Kindle, actually, so I can give it a third read. I've probably read it two or three times already. I'll have to read it again. But
I
have heard
copies of it.
Read it. So, but that was one book that really had me feeling eerie as I went back a second time, knowing, you know, of course, the political scene now and actually seeing so much of the stuff be exactly right on. It was a little spooky, I have to say.
Wow.
So another thing I wanted to discuss was we've talked a little bit about the Barefoot Gardeners and about food not bombs. And Peggy, you had mentioned the Roosevelt, which has done a lot of great things. Can you tell us a little bit more about that facility? I want to make sure that our listeners know that this is an actual building, place, initiative right in downtown Tampa where they're supporting a lot of new thought and new projects.
Yeah, I have to tell you that I actually know a lot about it, but it's all secondhand. It's actually going to be my first time actually getting there when I go in a few weeks to this Sacred Economics talk. But I just have heard so much about it and know that they're doing a lot of innovative and progressive and sustainable things and ideas and events, and the building itself, they did things to it that were even the money, that the way they raised the money was a different ways. There are all kinds of ideas that they've got going that are not things that we haven't been done before, and maybe Mary knows even about it even more than I do. I don't know, you know.
But, I just know some of the people, but I've never been there.
Oh,
I just know
okay.
some of the people that have been involved. I don't really know that much about it.
I know a few of the people that began it, and I also I wish Christy was still on the line because she could tell us more. But I know
she's
probably involved more than I am with the actual building and the projects that they're doing there. But we attended the Transition Town workshop at that building in October. And amazing place, and a perfect place for the facilitation of a meeting like that, or any special event. Actually, I think they do a great job. So, I will put a link to that their website too. Once we finish this interview, I'd like to try to make reference to all the links. And if I've forgotten any, then you guys send me an email with the links, and I'll be sure to put them up underneath the story on the blog. And I'm referring to wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. So I'd like to put the links under the story, and that is also where I'll put the widget for the archive of this show. So you'll be able to pass that around.
Yeah.
And let me see if there were any other questions I had for you all. What's coming up? What is next on the agenda for both of you?
Immediately we have a class, one of our regular classes we've been having this coming Friday and also Sunday, and they're from noon to 2:30, 2.5 hours, and we pack a lot in that 2.5 hours. If you go to the Barefoot Gardener .org site, then you can find the more detailed information about what we do, and we're really updating that site. It's a volunteer effort, and it's not been updated for actually a couple years, and we have a lot of accumulated information, and we want to reorganize it and add more to it. But if we're always discussing things on our Yahoo group and the Facebook page, the Barefoot Gardeners, and learning and sharing and connecting. That's another way of people connecting with each other and asking questions and getting answers and learning. So it's really good. And it's Central Florida, and it's organic, but also permaculture now is a big topic of conversation there. So that's probably the most. And we're actually planning on having more classes besides the basic introduction as the year of 2012 comes into play. We've been having a lot of ideas of other classes that we want to have, but that's immediately what's coming up for us.
Okay, since you mentioned 2012, I have to ask, what are your thoughts on 2012? Do you think it's just going to be a shift a radical shift in thinking and a different way of doing things, or do you think it's going to be a much more spiritual thing? Or a combination?
It'll be another year.
Both. I guess it would have to be both. I think things have been shifting and moving, but it seems as if it will quicken. It's quickening in 2012, and I'm like thinking that it's whatever we decide. It's not like we're just victims of, well, we don't have any choice in what happens. We can actually do what we want to do, and what we, if we put our thinking together and our thoughts together and everything, it can happen the way we'd like for it to happen, you know. So I'm not afraid. I'm actually very excited about this year. So
I'm kind of with you on that. I'm not afraid, but I'm not anymore. I'm kind of just resigned myself to whatever happens, and I'm pretty calm about it. And I just think it's a radical change and a shift in thinking, and I think it's going to have a lot to do with people's spirituality. And Mary, have you got anything to add about what about 2012 and what's coming up with you, and what are your next plans?
Well, 2012 is just another year as far as I'm concerned, but I am working with a number of young people who are awakening to there's more to life than buying stuff. They're looking at things a little differently. It reminds me a great deal of the late 60s in a way. The awakening is like I call it. And as far as what I'm doing, I'm doing some writing on my Facebook notes, and I've been working with just some young people because I am not going to be physically able to keep doing some of what I've been doing. I hope I can, but, you know, I'm getting to that stage in life where it's time to pass it on. And I'm excited about some of these young people. I really am. It's not just, they're not looking at just themselves. They're looking at what they can do to make a difference. And that's really important.
Do you think the Occupy movement has spurred a lot of that different thinking? Do you think that's just kind of awakened people, especially people?
Okay, I think that the one, Occupy Wall Street, started making people think. Because I think some of those people were a little older and a little more mature, but they realized that they have to go beyond going around and holding up a sign, that they really actually have to start making changes. And they're encouraging people to think about those changes. I mean, they have permaculture up there. They had a sacred space for all spiritual things. I mean, it wasn't just one thing. And I think what it is people are realizing that things just aren't right, and they're looking for a way to make those changes. And I think, like Peggy says, that people are just waking up. It can't keep going it's going.
No.
I think a lot of the people in the Occupy movements, and I don't want to really generalize, you know, that much, but there was a lot of people who, it was building and building the frustration of things were not going well. You know, they're out of work or something, and they're losing homes. And,
yeah, it was definitely
and then
economic.
Looking around, and there's so many things were happening that it just became overwhelming, and they just didn't know what to do about it. And exactly, they might have ideas what they think should happen, and so they just found an outlet to express their unhappiness. And so then the next step is to say, not just to keep saying, to point and say, and you need to fix this, pointing at the government or pointing and saying, blaming them, and you didn't do this right and all this kind of thing. So I look at it as there are people now who are frustrated and saying, well, they might think, oh, somebody needs to take care of this and take care of it. But I have a tendency to feel more like it begins with myself, you know, to take care of things.
Right.
And I And people are caught up in a lot of things. All of us have been caught up into.
I got to break in because this is a little bit of the show, and I want to thank you all for being on the show.
Okay.
We had Christy and Peggy and Mary, Permaculture Wise Women from Tampa. I want to thank Roundtree 7, Hoodooed, and Here Be Monsters for sponsoring our show. The archive will be up on the blog tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening in, and get your permaculture gardens going and start growing and in the change. Good night. Wise
Thanks,
Women
Amita.
Media will be next Monday, 8 to 10. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, too, Anita. Thanks. Bye-bye.